Welcome to East Meets West, episode 250. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And this is the first of the new, the newest era of East Meets West,
yes,
where we just record whenever we damn well feel like it.
Yes, which is a lot like the old era.
It's exactly. We had this brief era where we had advertisements and a regular schedule and a live audience, and that, you know, was too much like a real show.
Yes, it was. In retrospect, a lot of work, and not getting the show together, but literally scheduling to be there.
Yeah,
it was a little. A lot more elbow grease than I anticipated.
In some ways, I feel like we did the show more often before that, because what would happen is one or the other of us couldn't make it on a Sunday, sometimes instead of getting a guest host, we'd just say, "Oh, we're not going to do a show this week." Whereas in this model, we would just say, "Well, we'll record the show on Tuesday instead." And then recently we started realizing, well, we can do an audio-only episode when we miss the Sunday. And now it's just like, you know what? Let's just go back. Sometimes the old ways are best.
Yes. And, I think it's a more genteel.
Yes. Here's an example. I'm actually in Kailua on Oahu in Hawaii.
Suffering.
Ugh, it's so hard. I'm here for a speaking engagement, and normally what we would have to do, because I'm flying home Sunday evening, is say, oh, I guess we should do an audio-only episode, because we'd normally do it on Sunday, we'd probably do it on Monday or something like that, and it would become, oh, we got to contact people, let them know we're not going to do it, or find a guest host, whereas instead, under this model, I just called up Roger on a Friday evening. He was able to get home, and we're doing the show now. We're doing it a little early. I don't know when I'm going to post it, though. It may not post until Monday, but that's fine.
It's a contractor special. I like that.
I want to thank, actually, Ron Albu, who is the vice president of the Honolulu Mac and Apple User Society, and he has been very nice, driving us all over the island, and is letting us use his office so that I can have bandwidth to do the show, which is pretty great.
That is incredibly gracious of him.
So if you need legal work in Kailua, try Albu and Albu.
That's nice. Is it him and his brother or him and his father?
Him and his wife.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Heart to Heart, except instead of solving mysteries.
When they met, it was legal proceedings.
Legal. It was litigious.
It was litigious.
It's interesting that we were talking about, or rather I mentioned genteel, because all this week I think I have seen more of the bad side of humanity than I have in quite some time.
What do you mean?
And the level of meanness in people.
Is it because me and your girlfriend were making fun of you about your impending bald spot on Twitter?
That was that's the lighthearted end of the meeting. You know, I don't think I told you, but I was the other day, I think it was either Monday or Tuesday, I was driving home, and you probably saw my tweet about the guy in the blue Mustang, but I was doing a cruise around 70, which is not slow, 70, 72 miles an hour. And this guy in this late model blue Mustang tries to turn into me, into my lane.
Uh-huh.
I can't really swerve because there's a car right next to me on my left side.
No signal, right?
No, well, it doesn't matter. He's like right on the side of trying to turn into me. And so I give him a couple of honks. Right, to like, you know, not like aggressive, like honk. It's like honk, honk.
Yeah,
right?
You're not supposed to use the horn as a punishment or as a way of expressing frustration. You're supposed to use it to alert other vehicles of your presence on the road. Sounds like that's exactly what you're doing.
And so I guess he gets upset. And so he speeds up and then cuts me off.
Oh, jeez.
And then I'm kind of like, all right, whatever, dude. And I flip him off, all right? I raise my finger, put the middle finger up, and this bastard, and I'm saying bastard, because he's maybe 80 feet in front of me, he slams on the brakes.
This is not on a side street, right? This is on the freeway.
This is the freeway. This is 280 South. And so I was lucky that there was no traffic because I literally had to swerve around him into the next lane to get around him. That's like, really? How much of an asshat do you have to be that?
To risk your own life to make a point.
Yeah, to be that spiteful.
Yeah,
I mean,
forget he's also risking your life, but like he could have been killed.
he would have, honestly, I think he would have been in more injury than I would have been. I have surround sound airbags in my car. Like it's like,
Surround sound airbags?
well, I call it that because
Oh.
it's literally on every pillar of my car.
You're
So
not protected by walls of noise. They're actually airbags.
yeah, I'm protected by walls of airbags. So, I might have broken legs, worst case. But I'm a tech guy. I don't know. But and then this morning or this morning I was going through the New York Times because of that huge tornado that tore through the southeast.
Yeah, it has really ripped up Tuscaloosa, Alabama, amongst other places.
And I was going through the comments and I could not believe the amount of spiteful, narrow-minded, like, well, that's what they get for being a red state, or it's like, really? People just died and
You serious?
you're gonna be a jerk now? And it just seemed, I don't know, it seemed that everyone, of late, maybe the past 5 or 6 years seems to be incredibly nasty.
I don't think it's new. I think it's, it's one of those things like people just you start to notice it for some reason and it seems like it's new, but I think it's always been there.
I said, it's just like, I don't know, what is it with people that I mean, you've seen me get mad. I'll get
Oh
pretty,
yeah.
I'll think of things, but I
You
never.
scare me.
I mean, I don't go around with a machete and, hunt them down or anything,
No.
or like, scare the. It just
Have you
seems.
ever, okay, here's, because I think there's two different things going on in your two different examples. The easier one to talk about is the Tuscaloosa stuff, which is the anonymity of the internet. Even if
Yes.
you have a username attached to it, there's always that feeling of you're speaking into a void, right? Because you don't see the person, you don't get the visual cues, and you know those people would not say those horrible things if they were standing there in person with someone from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or some other place. It's just, we've talked about that before. It's that false protection, and once you confront them, they change their ways, but they just say, people say stuff that they don't even really mean when they don't think there's any repercussions. The guy on the freeway, though, that's road rage. That's where people start to qualify road rage as a psychological disorder, because that doesn't make any sense at all. There's no logical reason why you would stop your car in a freeway just because someone flipped you off. I mean, you're not even totally in the right there, Roger, because you did flip the guy off, but that reaction is way out of proportion.
How can you have the freeway was, 70% empty? He could have easily sped, way up because there's like, two additional lanes. He could have just easily sped up and around me. I mean, he
Have
was.
you ever done something for retribution after being angry at someone on the road, besides just a flip off, like taking an action with your car?
I've thought about it. I will say I've thought about it. I've never acted on it.
You've never acted. I've done it once recently.
Wow. I want to see you turn into the Hulk.
No, but it's not like the guy in the freeway. I didn't risk anybody's lives, because I like to think that I'm smarter than that. Like, I'm not going to risk my own life just to make a point. But there was a guy who got in front of me you got I got off the 101, and I'm on a feeder road going into Petaluma, California. I'm on my way to work, and this guy changes lanes to cut me off before we go down to one lane, and then goes incredibly slow, like well below the speed limit in a place where I can't get around him. I'm like, fine, if you feel you need to go that slow, you could have just let me pass. But no, you feel like you've got to teach me a lesson that this is what I'm thinking, right? I don't even know if this is true, but this is what I'm thinking. Like, oh, you think you got to teach me a lesson that I'm driving too fast, so you're going to go slow. Fine. So then when it comes back out of the one lane and comes back to two, I go around him because he's still going slow, and then I get back in front of him. And I slow down to 20 miles an hour. And then I slow to 19. And then I slow to 15. And he's still behind me. And then I slowly, I'm like, I think I got to 12 before he finally went around me. And I just waved as he went by.
Wow, that's pretty passive
It
aggressive.
was really awful. I'm not proud of myself. It was like, and then later that day, I felt really, I'm like, why did I do that? That was just stupid. Like, but it was road rage. I was so mad that I was like, I'm gonna show this guy, I'm gonna get in front of him, show him what it's like to be behind somebody who's going really slow. What is it that makes us
Be
feel
passive.
so protective of our right to drive the way we want to drive on a highway?
In your situation, I would be frustrated. I would have been really, really annoyed,
But really, who,
but
I mean, honestly,
I would have not done what I would have just sped by him really
yeah, and
fast.
most of the time that's what I do. But something just really got to me that day. I was a little extra irritable or something. And I notice it, it happens more now that I'm driving a lot more. There's more times where I'm tempted to just be like, and I lay on the horn or something, or I just mostly I just say stuff like, why is that person doing that stupid thing? I don't understand.
I think, and this is part of my theory, is that more often than not, hear my voice crack. More often than not, when you're in the car, it's often because you need to get somewhere, and you need to get somewhere within a certain time frame. It's not like you can take a leisurely drive to where you want to go. You have an appointment to keep, and so anything that kind of keeps you from that. I mean, because I notice that when I'm walking down the street, like downtown, and there's a lot of people, and I'm trying to make, a different appointment in a different, building 3 blocks down and to the right. I kind of get annoyed with people because they're walking too slow. They're walking 4 or 5 abreast, blocking the entire sidewalk. I think that might be it. We're just kind of agitated because we're being delayed from our goal.
I think that is an element of it. But then, now that you're like making this analogy, it puts me in mind of something that maybe ties it back to that online behavior a little bit, which is when you're on the sidewalk and everything's crowded and you get frustrated, you're not going to start yelling at people, which would be the equivalent of honking your horn, because they're right there. They're in person. They're real. And you have to deal with them. At worst, you actually say, "Excuse me, I need to get by you." And maybe you're a little miffed or something, but it kind of resolves itself because you can interact directly. I think what's going on the highway is you're in your own little bubble, right? You're alienated from everything else on the road. Is not a person. It's more of an object, a thing, and they become less real in a way.
I totally see that. And I mean, the online thing is just it's kind of weird. It's a quasi bubble because you get but also it, and it's weird because you get to see the reaction to what you've done, but within the safety of your own home or wherever, right? It's not like that person can come barging in through your door
Right.
and start screaming at you
Right.
or find you down the street. Yeah, it's like you throw something out in the middle of a crowd and you see how everyone reacts, but since they don't know who threw it, they can't really do anything about it, but they will react to that particular event, and they'll say things, and in a certain way, in a way, there's a certain amount of gratification when you, I think, elicit a reaction like that, like that you're being noticed, that somehow you're more important than you were when you were just an anonymous nobody.
Yeah, and in cars, it's a middle ground, right? Because you can see the other people, and they can retaliate, obviously, like they did with you. But there's a kind of a feeling of armor around you, so it's not as impervious as the anonymity of the internet. But there's a little bit of that separation going on, where you're in your own little sphere inside of your car. And people have different, everybody's got a different theory of what proper behavior on the road is. I mean, forget what the law is. This is what I think it's one of the more interesting aspects of human sociology, is that there's a law of how we drive that is not reflected in how we drive. And some of it is anti-safety and some of it isn't. But nobody drives the way the law says you're supposed to, right? They not people don't t put their turn signal on at the exact amount of feet before they turn or change. Some people don't use turn signals at all. People don't drive at the speed that you're supposed to. I mean, a speed limit is supposed to be as fast as you're supposed to go when you're passing somebody, right? But people treat the speed limit as the minimum, So there's all these things, and if someone else isn't playing in a way that is compatible with the way you drive, you start to get frustrated, and you're like, why is that idiot doesn't know how to drive?
And I think our constantly being connected with people might have a downside. I mean, at some point you just get irritable. You just want to be alone. And I get that way. I seriously do. So I just get really tired of people, where you just want to sit somewhere where people aren't nagging you, wanting something from you, and you're not, there to there or there, to, where they can physically or even electronically, like through email. People, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna go on vacation. I'm gonna be disconnected. I'm not gonna be on email. And you know what? You thinks it seems kind of not cliche, but a little phony. But really, when you do it, you realize how much you enjoy not being tethered to something. Not tethered to someone else's deadline. Not tethered to someone else's expectations. You
But
can just like,
it's so hard to
it
actually
is.
get away.
And that's the problem. I think, people find it so difficult to get away. And so you just get a lot of this irritation, this tension that builds up. And what happens is there's that one spark that sets it off, like whether it's on the freeway or maybe, walking down the hall, and you just explode. I've done it once, where I just didn't, when I was done, it's like, holy crap, what did I just do?
What did you do?
So.
You can
At a
change the
previous,
names to protect the innocent if you need to.
I it was a previous job I was working. It was just I just hated the job. It was ridiculous hours. My coworkers were of the variety that I couldn't rely on them.
Yeah, no, I know, Roger. You used to work with me. Okay, fine.
And so we were doing an event, and while I took a break to go get a milkshake over at Jack in the Box or whatever they had their equivalent. And this little kid and his punk friends are like trying to show me up and block me from walking forward, like literally blocking me. They couldn't have been more than like 7 or 8, and I totally like pushed the kid back, and
Oh my God.
it's like, what are you gonna do? And it's like, it didn't occur to me later. It's like, I wasn't mad at the kid, I was mad at my job, but it exploded
You were just
in
you
that.
yeah, you'd hit that breaking point.
And it's, people have different, tension points and points where they'll break. And, I think that's why you get some of these shootings, you get some of these incidents where, like that one guy in Japan went around stabbing people, stabbed 7 people.
Yeah, I think I tend to think a lot of that has more to do with an inability to deal with a mental problem of some sort. But that may be the mental problem some of them have to deal with, is an inability to deal with their own frustration and rage, and then it boils over in that way.
And it seems kind of hindsighty, but when you think about the modern quote unquote lifestyle, I think in school, I think learning how to resolve aggression is one of the big ones. How to take yourself out from that high point where you're just totally boiling with rage, you're just frothing over, and learn how to learn how to recognize those signs, and learn how to know and learn how to step back.
Well, and learn how to confront things that are frustrating you,
Yeah, or
so that they don't build up and boil over, right?
because you have I can see it. I mean, I just with our 24-hour lives, online, on TV, we're just inundated with examples of where bad behavior and stuff is kind of put on the spotlight. But instead of kind of shaking our heads in disgust, we kind of like that because that gives us an excuse. That gives us kind of almost a carte blanche to, they do it, why can't I, right? Why some celebrity goes ape shit over in a bar, why can't I do the same thing? Because they're more famous and they're rich. I'm just some average Joe, why can't I get away with it too? And so I think it kind of feeds on itself a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's just learning to that being polite doesn't mean being nice, if that makes any sense. I think a lot of times we hesitate to express our frustration or our criticism of something because we think, well, I don't want to be a jerk. And so, but then it starts to build up, and you're getting frustrated, and that outlet goes somewhere else. So a well-adjusted person figures out how to deal with it, maybe loses it like you did with the kid with Jack in the Box once in a while, like very rarely. But if someone has a real serious inability or a high level of anxiety built up, then they're going to start losing it more and more often. But if, whatever end of the scale you're on, learning how to express like what you're doing is not okay with me, is incredibly important.
And it's funny, I realize I do certain things that until that day I didn't really notice that I did. A lot of you notice I tend to whistle a lot, right? Especially in the hallways. And I realize that I actually do that in a way to kind of diffuse tension. I find that if I whistle, I can actually burn away some of the tension that gets built up.
That's like a safety valve mechanism. That doesn't get to the heart of the problem, but it keeps you from, yeah, it's one of those kind of adaptations that I'm talking about that help you keep you from losing it, right?
I mean, there are things, you know how work is. There's things that will never get resolved, no matter what you do. I mean, short of quitting, some people can't afford it.
Well, and then, yeah, that's another thing, which is there's one thing to like express your frustration and make sure people know like that's not okay with me, and I'm this frustrates me. And then there's also that position when that's like fine, it just keeps happening anyway, and then it becomes a lesson in acceptance
And
and
coping and
yeah and
understanding
coping.
that,
That's exactly right.
what was the other thing? I whistle. There was one other thing. I just tend to be really nice to people now, and I don't know what it
He
is.
didn't
That,
use
that
to, folks, believe me.
when I was like no, when I was a kid, I was a bastard. And but as I got older, like around like late high school, college, I tended to be I just do small things, just help people. I would help people up with their strollers upstairs and stuff, or hold the door open for people. And you know what? That actually it seems kind of bizarre, but in many ways it actually helps the person helping more than the person you're helping.
C.S. Lewis was a big believer in the power of acting the way you want to feel.
Exactly.
It helps you to get it. It doesn't make you feel that way, but it helps you move down the road towards that. If if you're angry and you act on anger all the time, then you're going to be angry. But if you're angry and you try to act in a way that's more polite and happy, it'll help push the anger down. It won't solve it, but it does.
God, we feel like a self-help group.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of the show, right? Is we're a different show every week.
It
Sometimes we're
certainly
a science
keeps
fiction review show. Sometimes we're a philosophical show. Sometimes we're politics talk. This week we're self-help.
it's
You
Pledge
are
Week,
good
really.
enough. You're smart enough,
And
and
gosh darn it, people like you.
they really do. Did you watch any of the Royal Wedding?
I did not. You know what? It was one of those things where I could be either the minority or majority of people that doesn't really care. I think it's great that they're getting hitched. I wasn't at all really interested in like watching the ceremony. Some people really enjoy that. I always kind of find I found the one between Princess Di and
Charles.
Charles to be my parents watched it, but I thought it was really boring, and it just didn't really have any,
I thought this one was less boring than Charles and Di. I remember watching the Charles and Di one when I think it was 11, and just being like, "Wow, this is taking forever." I don't even know that it did take any longer. I think I was just, when you're
You're a
young,
kid.
you're less interested. We flew in, our flight was delayed. We landed, we got to our room, like I turned on the TV, and it was just at the point where Kate Middleton was getting into her car and driving to the church. And so we kind of timed it perfectly, and got to see all of the important bits, and the wedding. And I really wasn't like dying to stay up to see it, but events worked out where I didn't have to force myself, and I enjoyed watching it. It was a nice little piece of history. I'm a fan of English history, and as you know, And so I liked seeing all of the allusions and explanations of the ceremony and everything. And I thought that frankly, Prince William and now the Duchess of Cambridge, Kate Middleton, were kind of hilarious. Like they just had a look in their eyes and a look on their faces of like, yeah, this is all a little much, but we have to do it, and
Keeping
whatever.
up appearances.
Yeah, totally. Much more so than I've ever seen on any of the other British royal family.
And I do think people who feel some connection or generally just enjoy that. I mean, I think they got a lot out of it. I'm not really like I could care less about inaugurations, weddings. I mean, there's a lot of things I think are done more for show than for actual, an underlying, a reason to do it, because it just looks good. And I don't know. In a way, it just seems like, yeah, I understand. I understand that Prince William, is it William, right?
Yeah.
Will and Kate. Sounds like a TV show.
Yeah.
I think they generally love each other. It seems kind of odd to have everyone look at it, like, who really isn't part of your close-knit family or
But
friend.
they are the monarchy. It's funny. I mean, several things are funny about it to me. I think it's incredibly funny that it's much more popular in the United States than it is in England. Where there's a lot of ambivalence around the monarchy. There's definitely people who are very supportive of the British monarchy, and dyed-in-the-wool supporters of it. But there's a lot more ambivalence where folks are like, it's this kind of quirky old institution. It's a little bit of a drain on finances. I'm not sure why we are, spending so much money supporting this institution. But Queen Elizabeth has been very smart and very good at not only limiting the extravagance of the royal family with a lot of concessions to tradition, obviously, but also trying to put the monarchy out there as a charitable force. All of their appearances, all of their press releases are all about visiting places and pushing charities, and Prince William has been taking that up. He's a member of the armed forces and a member of search and rescue. So a very giving profession, very and one of service at the same time, to show like he's not just coasting on his inheritance. He's actually out there trying to do something to make a better world. And so I think I don't know what's going to happen when Queen Elizabeth finally ends her reign, whether Prince Charles will step aside and let Prince William take over, or whether, Charles will reign for a limited time and then step aside. But I think the smartest thing they could do is go from Queen Elizabeth very quickly into making William king, because from all I learned in this coverage, he is very much into modernizing the role of the monarch in very realistic terms. He likes his privacy. They live in Wales. They go grocery shopping themselves. They don't have a bunch of servants. And I think I could see him keeping the tradition of the monarchy alive in ways that answer those critics who are like, why are we spending so much to support this? And I think that's a really interesting way of preserving a monarchy rather than just overthrowing it and tossing it out.
It's. I mean, I think it's. I think more so for Americans is because we don't have one, and for the people who, Britons and any other country that still has, Queen Elizabeth as the, figurehead of their country, it might seem a little archaic and, what's the point? But we enjoy it because we don't actually have to live with it day in and day out. There's these. A couple of times a year, it's like, ooh, this is exciting. But when it gets back to it, if we don't like our present course, we do have something that, when we replace the president, he becomes the new head of state. He becomes the face of the country. You can replace a prime minister. You can replace Tony Blair, Brown, or whoever. But the Queen of England is still the face of that country, and. For some people that's really awesome. It's really cool. It's a testament to kind of, how well a constitutional monarchy can run. And for other people, it's like, well, this doesn't represent us anymore. This isn't who we are. This isn't what we're about. Costs a lot of money. We're in a big budget hole as it is. We're cutting spending from all sorts of things: education, military, social services, and at the other hand, now we got to pay out for this huge party that none of us get invited to. Oh,
Yeah.
we can see it on TV, but we can't go down there and like, hey, let me give you some of the cake.
I wonder if any, I'm sure someone will do this analysis, but I wonder if the royal wedding pays off in generating income via spending, people coming to the country, going, tourism dollars in essence, versus how much is spent on the wedding itself. And I don't know how much is spent out of the royal funds of the family versus the government's funds. I actually don't know how any of that works. It'd be interesting to find to look into that some more and see like what is the actual cost of having the monarchy, and does it pay off in people visiting Buckingham Palace and coming to England
Well,
to see this preserved institution, which Queen Elizabeth actually does wield tr some real power under the Constitution of the United Kingdom. She can't ever use it, or they'll cut her off immediately, both funding wise and probably amending the Constitution. But technically on paper, she still has a lot of power.
the people who like the monarchy, and this is my own observation, is they like it because it doesn't feel corrupt. It still feels like it's an institution above the kind of the backstabbing behind the graft, the corruption, the pandering, the very
And
kind of
that's because
little.
it really has limited power,
Yeah,
exactly.
it, because you know it, but that's the benefit, right? It's never engaged in that kind of ground level form of politicking that gets everyone dirty. Doesn't matter what side you're on. Invariably, when you're in it, you're gonna stink. And because they're above it, they can always appear to be, the kind of pristine, the uncorruptible, institution of government, which for some people is a powerful symbol because no matter how bad it gets with the prime ministers or how bad it gets with your MP or the local council, that there's a model, there's a family for the most part that works, and they don't engage in a lot. Oh wait, well they did for a while, but they don't engage in a lot of rumor mongering
Not any, yeah, right.
and just
Not as
kind of that,
much.
not as much, none of that scandalous stuff that it's like, oh my God, this one MP gave it, turned in an expense report so he could. So he could build a private moat around
You
his own
do you'd
house.
have mistresses and conspiracy theories and even
What?
around the current royal family.
Oh, you can, but I mean, you don't see it in the newspaper where people are like,
I don't know, all that
this.
stuff around Lady Diana, Princess
Oh,
Diana.
that, but the, but I, well, that's what I'm saying. But not recently, right? Not you. You don't have allegations that that the Prime Minister of Britain, Brown, kind of coerced the whole trade for the Pan Am bomber to Libya, returning him to Libya so they could get favored contracts for oil exploration, and just a lot of stuff like that that seems very unseemly and very I don't know, very shady.
Well, that's it for this episode of East Meets West. You can find us online, subrilliant.com/EMW. Let us know what you think of dealing with rage or monarchies, or both at the same time. Raging monarchies, perhaps. Thanks to the Frog Pants Network for allowing us to be on the network, frogpants.com. And thanks to you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.